I'm Neil Kesterson, and I'm an audio engineer and producer, and my job is to turn words into a soundscape.
Hi, welcome to the Writer's Rotation podcast. I'm your host, Kathy Stamps. I love words and writing and people and talking, so I'm talking to people who write all kinds of things in different professions. It's a writer's rotation. Neil.
Hey, what up?
How are you?
I'm doing good.
I pronounce your name with two syllables.
That's the way my grandmother said it.
Neil.
We're
in your confines of your audio studio.
It was always mostly tech companies that were in here. There was one tech company a long time ago. They developed this technology where it could see through the walls. And it was looking at heat signatures. And the landlord told me that he stood right there. And the guy held it up and he goes, I could see people walking down the street and cars going by. He goes, they were blobs, but we could see it. That was in the 90s, I think. And now it's pretty regular. So one of the initial developments in that came out of this room.
Ooh.
We custom built everything in here. This is a floating room. It floats on rubber. All the stuff you don't see, such as the joists and all that, all float separately to eliminate sounds from coming from the outside. And then the inside has these panels that if you know the pink insulation that you put in your attic, it's pink insulation that is compressed down and made stiff into 2x4 foot boards. And then we cover that with special cloth that allows it to go through and penetrate and get caught so it doesn't ring.
Wow.
It's a very, very quiet room. We have to have it quiet so that we can have someone stand back from a microphone, such as when they're doing what's called ADR, dialogue replacement for movies and TV.
Automated dialogue replacement.
And we put a microphone, such as they used out in the field, above them, that's a lot further away from this microphone is from my mouth, and they redo the scenes. So if I didn't have these panels up, it would sound like they're in a bathroom. And that wouldn't translate to the screen very well.
Some famous people have been in this room.
Yes, a lot. And we've...
Do some name dropping.
Well, Steve Zahn lives in town. He's an actor. He's been coming here for a dozen years, I guess. Let's see. Sam Shepard. He's no longer alive, and he's done several projects in here. I did his very first commercial voiceover, by the way. Hmm. Never done one before. And we did a couple documentaries and ADR. And I taught him how to use an iPhone.
Cool.
Malcolm McDowell hung out here all day and we became buds. I'm just saying that. He was very, very friendly and very talkative. And we had a lot of time to kill. We have sports figures, political figures. Yeah, it's pretty cool to meet these people.
Tell one of your William Shatner stories.
Yeah, I worked with William Shatner a lot, mostly about 25 years ago, but over the years he's been in because he has a horse farm here or a farm. I don't know if it's a horse farm, but I know he liked to do push-ups before every session.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was always fit. That's why he still rides horses at 92 years old. He's great to work with. All the stuff about him being dicey with people in the studios, you've heard the tapes. You know, you can go out there and search it. Never with me. I've never witnessed that. And I suspect, knowing him, that 99% of those, he's just toying with them.
Also, I have a theory that if you come across as you know what you're doing, you are a professional,
Yeah. They
are putty in your hands.
Yes.
But if you come across as, oh my God, you know, then they're like, oh, watch this, I'm going to toy.
Yeah.
So here's my story. This was 1,000 years ago, I believe. He had agreed to do a public service announcement radio for a horse show. And I went out to his farm in Woodford County with, for some reason, a sales rep from the station. And I had written it for William Shatner. I'd written like 6 words for 60 seconds. You know, I didn't do the typical 2.5 words per second, 150 words. I think I don't remember now, but I think I maybe had 120. Maybe 130, I don't know. But I'd written it specifically for him because he has a very deliberate read. Mm-hmm. So he got through the take, and it was 70 seconds, and his windbreaker was breaking wind on the mic. It was rustling a lot. So I said, oh, that was great. Can you do it one more time, just a tidge faster, just a tidge, and take off the coat, the rustling on the microphone. He didn't flinch. He just
did it. He's one of the best people I've ever worked with for self-directing.
So in two takes, it was perfect.
Yes.
Thank you very much. And we're gone. On the way home, not home, on the way back to the station, this sales rep, I don't even remember her name, lit into me like, how dare you speak to William Shatner that way? He graciously donated his time and you traded him. And all I could think of was, isn't he an actor?
Listen.
don't directors tell people things like that?
Yes. Here's what I'd say to her is, yes, he graciously showed up, but these are two working professionals. I'm a professional. He's a professional. He understands what I'm trying to say to him. But your job is to make him sound great.
Exactly.
And he knows how to sound great. He needs a little direction and not how to say
exactly.
it. Exactly. He needs direction on how it's going to fit.
It was such an easy fix.
And she might have heard that and thought what you were doing was a no-no. And it's not a no-no.
Mm-hmm.
I would defend you to the end of days. I wrote about some of my experiences with him in my book.
Before you wrote your book, or maybe whilst you were doing it, you were writing and are writing really, really cool newsletters that are also blogs, or they started as blogs and then became newsletters. How does that work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it started as a blog when everyone else was blogging, just a way to market. My original take was to kind of show off some of the stuff we're doing here, but it really kind of fell flat. I decided that I would kind of go back in history with a lot of stuff. My favorite, I love history. And in my industry, I love the history of audio engineering and sound. So I started writing little tidbits that weren't too technical. Some of them, some people would probably say, I don't want to read this one. And that's fine. Other people would be like, oh my gosh, you know, this is great. I've learned a lot, but I'm going to go dive in deeper somewhere else. That was the goal, is to write something that's short, easy, to the point, that can help people think about sound in a different way. So some of it might be about history of technology, but some of it is, you know, like one of them I wrote was on how they're using sound on farms, helping cows produce more milk, helping pigs, even listening to pigs, and you can tell when a pig is going to give birth by a sound they make and the squeaking.
When you say sound, do you mean Mozart? Or do you mean...
It's everything. Listening to the sounds, creating sounds for the cows to listen to, even mimicking birds of prey that you put out in your among your crops so that other birds, when it senses them, it comes in and they do birds of prey sounds. And then they get used to that and then you change it. It's incredible. And even included in that was hearing loss among farmers. And in Australia, they did a study and found that 60% of farmers under the age of like 30 had already had severe hearing loss because of tractors they're riding in and all that. So there's now an initiative, worldwide initiative, to help farmers. I mean, you know, you think about sound differently. We live in a loud world and a lot of light pollution and sound pollution. So basically when I write these, I don't know anything about it, what I'm writing about. I'm not an expert. I am really interested in the subject and I want to know more. And that's what drives me to write. Otherwise, I don't have anything to write about. So I have to be interested in it. And then I dig deep and use all kinds of sources. I'm sure I make mistakes in there, but I try to back up everything. I mean, some of them I write really fast, but most of the time I toil and toil and toil. Ugh.
And where can people subscribe to your newsletter?
Easiest is just go to my website and there's a link on there. It's dxaudio.com, dogxrayaudio.com. And it's called that. Dynamics Productions with an X on the end, and dynamics.com was taken. Dynamics.net was a porn site.
Great.
So I figured I better just keep Dynamics out of my URL and just stick with DX Audio.
When did your idea for the book start?
Initially 2015, and it kind of started as, because I do a lot of teaching. You know, my mother was a teacher, and she always said that if there's 30 people in your class, you have to have 30 different ways to explain something.
Oh, wow.
You don't necessarily have to, but everyone learns things in a different way. And when I started teaching, I realized I didn't know how I learned what I know. A lot of it was just by dumb luck. So I started thinking about that, and I thought, I need to start writing down some of this stuff to teach my students. And that writing this stuff down in little passages started to accumulate. I started looking. There was no book out there on how to get into the business. That's what it is. It's for younger people, people either just into the profession or maybe they've been in for 20 years. From basically from 16 years old up, how do you get into it and how do you succeed? And then here are some tips. Non-technical. Some of my tips in there get a little technical, but it's all this basic stuff you have to learn. But I started thinking about it. There was nothing out there. Nothing. And for the longest time, there was nothing until last year. And right before I released my book, there was another one that came out.
Oh, no.
But, you know, I think it's great because now there's two sources for students. And, you know, I'm not going to be selfish about that because they're two different, completely different books.
Good for you.
I mean, I really started writing with a fury during the pandemic because we had so much downtime. And I'm like, I'm not going to be one of these people that, you know, becomes an alcoholic. During this time, I'm going to start writing. And I wrote and wrote and wrote. And I enjoyed it after a while. I'm not a writer, but I wrote.
Is your audiobook out?
Yeah. I recorded it and edited it myself. Yes, because that's what I do for a living.
Yes.
I record audiobooks. So that part was not hard. Listening to myself for, see, 22-hour book means I probably recorded about 60 hours.
Oh.
You know, my sinuses are awful. I was hearing a squeak. I sound like I have wet sneakers on. You know, I'm listening to my voice, which I'm used to recording people with, you know, the voice of God. And I don't have a voice of God. And I have an accent. And, you know, I'm just not used to that. I've lectured and everything, but you know, I'm just not used to hearing my voice that much.
Where do you teach? Where have you taught?
Well, I've been an adjunct at some of the universities around here, the audio media programs, and an advisor to several high schools, including one in Georgetown, Elkhorn Crossing, that it's the most unique place I've ever been.
It is so cool.
Those kids that come out of this school as 18-year-olds, some of their videos are better than a lot of my clients' videos.
They're really good.
And or photography, you know, it's everything. They are rock stars.
I only had one thing that I told them one time that I thought was really good. Somebody has to be on Booger Patrol,
yeah.
Was the way I phrased it.
Yeah.
So you're going to need some Clorox wipes and just make sure things are clean before you shoot them.
Yeah. My contribution that I think really stuck is I introduced them to what a storyboard is. And I can't believe that they weren't teaching them that. And they storyboarded everything after that point, and it really streamlined stuff. And you plot out your visuals with cartoons, basically, like panels, and you put that part of the script under each thing, and then you can kind of see it.
Mm-hmm.
And in the more sophisticated film world, they actually animate that. It comes to life in scenes or commercials, you know, the high-end commercials, so that we can see it all before we commit to hiring crews and burning through what used to be film and sound tape. It's now gigabytes, you know, because it's the production part and post-production is very expensive. And storyboarding isn't in comparison.
Right. Anything you can do pre-pro.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I learned a lesson the hard way in an ad agency. When it looks good, your script looks really good. You have the right type. You have, the, you know, everything looks good. A client, a boss, anybody has a tendency to go, that looks good, because it does. I would just make up things, especially for car dealers. I would say 25,396, you know, I would just make up numbers, assuming that they were going to change it. And they would say, oh, it looks good. What do you mean it looks good? These were all.
Oh, no.
So then I put a blank. Because fill in the blank is very, very obvious to anyone reading it. So that's a really good tip.
Yeah, I've seen those horror stories of where they have dummy headlines to fill.
The lorem ipsum.
And then it makes it out on the into the magazine or newspaper or whatever. And you're just like, oh, I know what that's like, because I've had, I tell this story in my book about, you know, when you work in advertising, everything is like they need it yesterday. So
crash and burn,
It is crash and burn. So look, I used to tell people I put out fires and they'd think I was work for the fire department. No, I'm in advertising. And I got this thing out really fast at the last minute, and I'm driving home, and the commercial comes on. I'm like, oh, wow, man, that was fast. You know, it was just like 2 hours ago that I finished that, and it's already on the air. You know, this is great. And it's Tim announcing, and then he goes, let me take that again. Turn the car around, go back to work.
That's why we never, ever, ever said bad words. Because yeah, every mic is a hot mic.
Oh, boy, people that don't learn that feel bad for them.
I had, how many stories do I have? I had one time with Tom Hammond. We were out at a horse farm. It was a television commercial. And the car dealership had driven these new cars out there. It was a big to-do. The script had been approved by all approval parties necessary. Tom did it. I fed him his lines. He did it. Got the spots edited, played them for the boss man, blew a gasket, blew gaskets. And I was like, what? And now I don't even remember, but it was something about, it was a 4x4, and I think I called it a sport utility. I don't know. It was something about a 4x4. Do you not know the difference between a 4x4 and a, no, I don't.
That's why there's an approval process.
I do not know the difference. I just know how to type rebate assigned to dealer. And when I called Tom, he goes, well, you know, I wondered about that, but you're so good at what you do, I just assumed you knew what you were doing.
Oh.
And I said, Tom, no.
Yeah. When we used to work, especially internally, when I worked for a corporation, but it's just with all corporations, it has to go up the chain. And you know that there's going to be X number of revisions. So the people near the bottom are usually the ones that have their panties in a wad. So just put stuff in there for them to change, because you know it's going to come back, and they feel all important. And then you come back and then you do the other revisions at some of the other people that are, you know, legitimate revisions.
What kind of reader were you as a kid? Did you read?
You know, I did not read a lot of fiction. I read some, but my mother was an avid reader. She'd have several books going on at a time. It was not unusual for her to read two novels in a day during the summer when she was a teacher. She was an English teacher and a writing teacher. So she was a writer. So that stuck in my head. She was always correcting us on the right words in a friendly way, of course, but although she could be hard-headed about some things. But I read a lot of technical manuals and other things that I was interested in. And then in seventh grade or eighth grade, I think it was, my teacher gave me this book called Clockwork Orange.
Oh, wow.
Can't believe she thought I was mature enough that she thought I was one of the most mature ones in the class. So I read that. I was floored by it. Flash forward to just a few years ago when Malcolm McDowell was in here, who starred in the movie. When I finally got to see Clockwork Orange, I could not believe how close he came to the character in the book. It was him. I imagined him before I even knew who he was. And then I see the movie. I mean, it's like an epiphany how important actors are to a story. But he just embodied that. But then I started reading more and more. I loved science fiction, and I read a lot of science fiction. And then as I got older, I read more and more and more fiction. But I still read a lot of history, nonfiction. I'm reading all the time. My mother, she read everything, and she taught a lot of courses in different things. She had just, you know, amazing brain. My dad read everything he could get his hands on. Yeah, he was an avid reader. Yeah, I grew up with a lot of reading.
What about writing? Did you like the term papers?
No, I did not. I was not a writer on anything. I hated writing. When I was a junior in high school, I had this wonderful English teacher that taught us how to write research papers and essays. And when I got up in college, I remember taking this class that was all this, you know, as a freshman, and I was excused from most of the class during the semester because I had already done all that stuff, and I just whipped out research papers, and she was teaching the basics of it, and I'm like, I did this like 2 or 3 years ago. You know, great education that I had in high school in Ohio. So writing was just a chore for me. I didn't know how to start stuff. I didn't know how to finish. And when I worked for a corporation, a communication company, which the communications was in the name, they offered business writing classes for one of the teachers at EKU, Eastern Kentucky University, came up, and once a week we did writing stuff. And there were only like 5 or 6 of us in there. And I'm like, we're a communications company, for crying out loud. Why isn't this place packed?
Yeah, that's gold.
I learned so much in that class on how to phrase stuff, how to start stuff, how to, you know, be persuasive, everything. I still have a book that we bought, and I still reference it from time to time. I think at that point, I became comfortable writing, and I wasn't before because I'd had all this instruction, but I didn't want to be a writer. I wanted to be a musician. I wanted to be recording. I wanted to play baseball. I wanted to do all this other stuff except writing. And then once I became unafraid of it, then it just became part of my job and part of my way that I communicate. It's just one way I communicate. And once I related writing to what I do every day, which is creating soundscapes, I could see the connection. And that's one thing I've done throughout my life is connect what are seemingly unrelated things to each other. And that's the way I teach as well. I use analogies. I was like, why am I not listening to myself on this? I mean, this isn't as hard. I mean, it's hard. It's not easy, but it's not this barrier. You just poke a hole through that barrier and you can see a little pin light of what's on the other side, and that'll get you going. Now, do I sit and dream about writing all the time? No. You know, some people do. That's all they want to do is write. And it wasn't my first love. You know, I'd rather pluck on a piano or guitar or, you know, record a sound but I use it, like I produced it, self-produced a documentary, and I had to write for it. But I was determined that I was to have the least amount of voiceover that I could, because I felt that the people I was interviewing needed to tell the story. So using that, I was able to fill in the gaps. So it was a completely different type of writing. It was what do I need to get across to make what either they're about to hear or what they've just heard make sense? You know, because you can't ask people when you're interviewing for a documentary, you can't say, use this word. You know, it's all got to be free flowing.
And what was the name of your documentary?
It was The Beat of a Different Drummer. And it was about the Women's Army Corps Band, which is the last all-American female military band in the United States. And the reason I did it was my aunt was going to a reunion at Fort McClellan in Alabama. She was in during the Korean War. All I knew was my aunt was in the Army. That's all I knew. And she said, hey, they're having a 50th anniversary of all of us that were in the band. And I said, you were in the band? Now, she was a musician. She was a professional musician, but I had no idea. And I was looking for a documentary idea. So I had 2 weeks to figure out what I was going to do. And I tagged along, went down there, and basically my style is to just start the camera or open up the microphone and ask a simple question and just sit back and be quiet. And they would introduce me to all these people. I'm the first woman to be in an all-male band. I'm the first woman to command a military installation. I'm the first woman to do this. It was all these people that just had incredible stories. They were writing it for me, you know.
That is so cool.
It took 8 years to get it out. And that was about every 2 years they would have a reunion. So I would go with my cameras and do more interviews to fill in and fill in and fill in. And finally, I had enough that after 8 years, I went down and presented it to them. And now I'm proud to say it's played all around the world. It's in museum archives as a piece of history, which is pretty cool. It's not like a earth-shattering, groundbreaking documentary, but it's something that needed to be told of these people that were constrained by society.
Yeah.
And they did not want to be constrained. and they just did it. They just did it. I learned a lot. I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about, you know, society in general, that they just said, screw it, we're just going to do it. You know, they weren't trying to be, you know, be stars on all this. They wanted to do something, and this was how they could do it at the time.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's very inspirational.
Thanks, Neil. This was fun.
Thank you.
Thanks for letting me hang out in your studio.
Sure. Enjoyed it.
See ya. Thanks for listening to this episode of Writer's Rotation. Like and subscribe for more. And remember, writing is a marketable skill. Smiling is a remarkable skill.